Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. 36 years ago, Frontline explored abortion in America in a groundbreaking investigation. Now a new Frontline returns to the originally featured abortion clinic in Philadelphia to meet the doctors, the protesters, and the women who believe their stories must be told. From the bulletproof glass to the RU486 pill, much has changed in 36 years. But the debate remains much the same. And in spite of advances in care for pregnant women seeking abortion and for women seeking pregnancy assistance, the debate over abortion itself is more divisive than ever. Frontline's The Abortion Divide airs tonight at 9 p.m. Central, 8 Mountain on SDPB-TV. Elizabeth Leiter is Frontline's director for The Abortion Divide, and she joins us now on the phone. Elizabeth Leiter, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Lori. Thank you so much for having me.
Tell me about the decision to go back now and look at not only this topic again, but to meet some of the same people in the same clinic that was featured 36 years ago.
Well, the first film, which aired in 1983, which was Frontline's first season, was also one of their very first Emmy Awards. So I think that, the Emmy Award itself reveals how important and groundbreaking that film was. My co-producer, Mark Obenhaus, made that film, and it was a very deep and personal look at abortion 10 years after Roe v. Wade. So we were intrigued by this idea about returning, seeing what had changed, what was the same. And Mark still had a relationship with some of the folks from the first film, one being Dr. Izayu, who's featured both then and now in this film. And he's still an activist, anti-abortion and pro-life activist. So that made a lot of sense. And, of course, there was a lot of turnover. Some of the doctors from the first film no longer alive, or, you know, certain folks no longer around. But it seemed like the right time because, as you mentioned in your intro, this topic has not gone away. And if anything, it's more divisive, more combative, and more acrimonious than ever. And the part often left out, from my perspective, is the women's stories. When we talk about abortion in the media, we're focused on the courts. We're focused on legislation. We're hearing a lot of loud noise, as it were. We're very rarely hearing from the people who are making the decision themselves, which is interesting considering almost all of half of pregnancies in America, roughly half, are unplanned, and one in four women have an abortion at some point in their reproductive life.
So this Frontline features women who choose to get abortions and women who choose to deliver their babies, and often in difficult circumstances. And if you watch the entire episode, I just want to let listeners of South Dakota Public Broadcasting know that you know, watch the whole thing, because there's a lot of territory that's covered by the time that you get to the end. Let's talk a little bit, Elizabeth, about those women, because the doctors will tell you these are every kind of woman, all faith, all economic status. There are married women who come in with their husbands, a lot of mothers who have other children already. Tell us a little bit about what you found this time as far as, you know, how many different kind of women are coming into the clinic seeking abortion and abortion services.
Yes, there are so many women. This clinic is in Philadelphia, so you're in an urban setting, and it's open 5 days a week, and it's quite busy, especially on the weekends. This is a private clinic. It's not affiliated with a hospital or a Planned Parenthood, I should just state. And what we found sort of trends with the larger demographics of abortion in America, roughly 60% of all abortion patients already have children, and that is true of the women that we filmed with, and of the women shown, only one does not have a child. All the rest of the women that are featured have children. We met many women off camera who were more willing to talk off camera, and many of them had children, though some did not. The bulk of them are between 20 and 24, 18 and 24, but as the doctors state, there is a wide range of age, of socioeconomic groups, married versus unmarried, and religious groups. There are women that identified as Catholic and told me they were raised Catholic. There were women that were Muslim. There were women that had no sort of formal religious belief. And then what I found more often than not was they definitely had a spiritual belief, even if they wouldn't qualify it as one way or another. So it was very interesting to meet all of these different women from many different walks of life, all sharing their reasons for being there and similar reasons. You know, there's a lot of commonality in the reasons: financial issues, not being able to afford the children that you have at home, or it not being the right time in your life. And for some of them, that was the wrong partner. I didn't speak to this woman, but I understood that she came to the clinic because her husband had just died in a car accident. So she was terminating because she had just lost her husband. So there are so many reasons that women make this decision, though we find that they all share some commonalities.
And they were sharing some commonalities about, their willingness to speak out and tell their stories. And one woman said, her name is Taryn. She's she has two children of her own, recently divorced, and, has a corporate job, and said, part of me was, I should never speak of this. I should come and do this and tell no one. But tell me a little bit about what these women face as far as this notion of whether or not to even mention that this was part of their story.
That is one of the most important things to me, and really the core of this film, what you really hit on right there with Taryn saying, I thought I should just take this to my grave. And that is all related to the stigma of abortion, and that so many women felt like this. I understood that many women wouldn't want to participate. Abortion is a private thing, and it's related to another very intimate act. So I understand not everybody wants to talk about their private life on camera or even to a reporter, journalist at all. But I was so impressed by the women in both places, both in Mother's Home, a pro-life maternal shelter, and at the clinic, because there's so much stigma towards both of them. And there is a great amount of judgment about abortion and the women who seek it, the reasons why. I think some of the misconceptions are uneducated, lazy, don't want to take responsibility for their actions, and that's just not what I found in either place. And so it's so important to remember the stigma is what often silences people, but these women who wanted to participate really understood that there was value in them sharing in a very profound way, because there is very little upside to participation, if that makes sense. Like, there's so much you could lose and very little to gain, but I think they understood this greater significance of this film being made.
And what I find fascinating as well is to look at how the two sides, if you can call them that, the people who are protesting in front of the abortion clinic and are having conversations about, how do we convince more of these women to bring children into the world, and how do we support them accordingly? And then you have the doctors inside the abortion clinic who are saying this is their choice, to make. And sort of figuring out how to adjust to regulations, adjust to the protesters outside who are often, yelling at the women who are walking in. They have their escorts. How these two groups of people, and it's, minimizing it to say there's two groups, but have adapted over time in kind of fighting this, this what they see as a battle. How has it changed? I mentioned, bulletproof glass inside the clinic, and one of the people who are against abortion talk about the RU 486 pill sort of being one of the worst thing that ever happened, because it became, as easy as, swallowing a Tylenol. Tell me a little bit about what has changed and how people have adapted to that change.
Right. Well, I should just state that I was not a part of the first film, the making of that film, though I am very intimately aware of it and hear from Mark Obenhaus, my creative partner who directed the first film, about what has changed in his perspective. Certainly a lot has changed in terms of abortion, and you bring up RU486 and medical abortion, also known as abortion by pill, which completely transforms the procedure for women who are early enough in their pregnancies to terminate that way. So that's a major, both personal change for women's experience of it, as well as it's going to change legislation. And I think we will continue to hear about that in the debate about abortion moving forward. And you mentioned the bulletproof glass, so I think that there's a history of violence in this surrounding abortion that was really more prevalent in the 80s and 90s. And though it is not as common as it was, there was the last shooting at an abortion clinic was in 2015. So it's a very present thought in the minds of abortion providers and trying to keep patients safe and their staff safe. So there are things like buzzers and locks and lots of security. And I think that that's true of multiple clinics, not just the one where we filmed. There's in terms of legislation and that element of abortion access, since 1992 and the very famous Supreme Court Planned Parenthood versus Casey, that established an undue burden standard. So that said, states have the wherewithal to restrict abortion access or put in place sort of informed consent, which means women have to wait longer, and it also sort of paved the way for what we know now as trap laws, which inform how certain clinics operate, things like the width of hallways and admitting privileges for doctors. So there are all sorts of things that have changed in terms of access that are legislative attempts. And then, you know, we all continue to hear about the battle for the courts, and everybody's talking now about what will happen now that we have a new Supreme Court judge. And that's unknown, of course, though it's a very pressing part of this debate. So much has changed, and at the same time, what we've been talking about before, the women, that element remains the same. Women still face unplanned pregnancies and still make decisions regarding those. So that remains the same, but the world around it has sort of gotten a little more staunch and a little louder, in my opinion.
One of the things that I was struck by personally as I watched this, and if you're just tuning in, we're talking about Frontlines, the abortion divide, and it airs tonight at 9 p.m. Central, 8 Mountain on SDPB-TV. My guest is Elizabeth Leiter, the director and producer of the program. One of the things that struck me, Elizabeth, was I was surprised at how much I didn't know about surgical abortion, about medical abortion. And I'm wondering if you found a lot of misinformation. So there were things that, you know, that happened that I said, oh, I didn't, that was a surprise. I had, you know, I'd heard other things. So talk a little bit about misinformation and, you know, kind of getting to what really does this look like? How really long does it take? What really are the side effects or the potential complications? And what did you find accordingly?
Well, I should state I'm also just a documentary filmmaker and journalist and not a doctor, but I was also surprised by what I discovered about surgical and pill abortion, because when you work on a project like this, you really just sort of take the deep dive and do a lot of research, and you end up learning a lot more than you could have ever imagined. And in the process of working on this, I did a lot of research with my co-producer and creative partner, Mark Obenhaus, at the abortion clinic itself. So we spoke with many, many women, and we observed multiple abortions before we ever filmed them as a part of our research. I would just want to say that about 90% of the abortions in the U.S. occur within the first trimester, so in the first 12 weeks, and that means whether they're surgical or pill, they're quite early on, and in fact, to be able to take the pill, you have to be within the first 10 weeks. So most of the time, surgical abortions are fast; they're 3 to 5 minutes. You know, the doctors at the clinic tell us the complication rate is very low. That seems to track with other medical information from the from various other medical sources. However, there is quite often a lot of debate here, and so if you go to certain online sources, they'll tell you that you could get breast cancer from having an abortion procedure. It's not proven. The American Cancer Society disagrees. So there's it's so hard to get into that misinformation because it's at the core of this, right? Because that's belief driven. If you are anti-abortion, they might, you know, they're going to be, there's a different perspective on whether it's healthy or not. However, you know, we wanted to give valid reasons for both sides to be able to share their opinions on that. But what I found is that often, you know, women who decided to have surgical procedures, they wanted it to be done. The procedure itself is quick, although waiting at the clinic is not. Those who decided to take the pill often wanted to be in the privacy of their own home. You take one pill at the doctor's office and you take two at home. And they, you know, there's a variety of physical responses. Some women say it's like a heavy period. Some women say it's very, very painful. So there, again, a wide variety of responses. And I do just want to say that, you know, the women that shared with us were very, very brave to be talking about this publicly, as it's such a contentious debate. So we really wanted to stay focused on their stories and not to make a comment about what was right and what was wrong. And so I hope that your listeners will understand that as well, and that be sort of the value that this film brings on this very complicated subject.
Let's talk about some of the women who shared their stories about having their children and the people who reached out to them to help them, you know, if their pregnancy was more of a crisis event for them, helping them figure out what's next. Tell us a little bit about some of the people who are guiding that effort to reach out to women and say, you know, you're not alone in this journey.
The Crisis Pregnancy Center movement is a very, very big part of the pro-life or anti-choice, whatever language. The language itself is so deeply debated,
right,
that I want to say both, and I think that's important. That is a really big part of their care activism. So there are now thousands of crisis pregnancy centers around the country, and I want to be very clear to point out, though they have sometimes loose affiliations with parent groups, they are individually run. So you find a range of experiences within those clinics, and their goal is to interact with women who are facing a crisis pregnancy or an unplanned pregnancy and are not sure of what to do. So they offer services like free pregnancy tests and some that offer free sonogram if they have that technology, as well as counseling and sort of parenting classes. They are religiously affiliated, so the counseling tends to have a religious bend to it. And they are also evolving as this conversation evolves. So in the beginning, in the early 90s when they started to become prevalent, you know, it started in Hawaii actually in the very late 60s, I believe, if I'm getting that right, and then they've just grown in numbers. But in the early 80s, when the first film was made, there would have just been very few, and, you know, due to the internet, not really sort of on the map. Now we're much more familiar with them, and they run the gamut. You know, one of the criticisms of them is that some of them offer misinformation or coercive information, and they try to talk women out of their decisions, and some just offer very practical elements like a free pregnancy test or a sonogram. And sometimes women need the sonogram even to be able to go to the abortion clinic. So there's a very interesting connection there. And they want to interact with women and have a conversation as they're working through their process of deciding what to do.
And then when we go back to some of the women, you know, the mothers who were at the abortion clinic making that decision, and we talked a little bit about, you know, telling their story and the shame and the stigma, then also with these women who have decided to have their babies, sometimes we're talking about the same shame and stigma of a single mother or a mother who is, has been released from prison or has had an addiction problem. And so there were a lot of these women who were standing up and saying, this is who I am and this is what I'm choosing to do. Tell us a little bit about the shelter where those that you found where those women are welcome to stay for the first 6 months of their child's life.
I'm so glad you asked about that, Lori, and I wish I could talk to you all day because you really seem to get this, you know, the core and the heart of this film and this piece, which is, we filmed at Mother's Home, which is an outgrowth of Dr. Izayu, his original activism. He's featured in the 1983 film, and he's featured in this film as well. Mother's Home is a maternal shelter for women who are pregnant and for the first 6 months after the birth of their baby. Unfortunately, they can't bring other children to live there. There's just not quite the space. And so it's a really interesting place. They do not refer for either abortion or adoption. At least the current director has never come across that in her time there. So I found it a really unique place and very interesting to spend time. And I was incredibly impressed by the women there who as you state, face just as much stigma as the women in the clinic. You know, there's the same idea that these women are, you know, that a woman who's low income or poor and a single mother, you know, she's just as deeply judged as a woman who decides to have an abortion, in my opinion. And I thought it was really important to share their experiences. There's a lot of trauma that brings women there, a lot of addiction, as you mentioned, a lot of domestic violence. So these are women who've really been through a lot and are making the decision they're making. And I think people might want to know the reason why they don't believe in abortion or why they, you know, it's more deeply felt than that. These are individual decisions. So there's a young woman who lives there who has 8 children and 5 are in foster care, and she just does not believe in abortion. So it would not be something that she would do. So we're not really answering any questions with a place like Mother's Home. We're trying to explore women's decision making, and it was never our goal to say what these women should and shouldn't do. But I'm so glad that people will get the experience to see that there's so much stigma on both sides.
And there's an underlying conversation too, and you alluded to it earlier in our conversation, which is this is an intimate topic, but it goes back to another intimate topic. And so there is a conversation among many people about contraception and chastity as a word, you know, sort of comes out, promiscuity. We're mm-hmm. talking about abortion, but we're also talking about sex and women's sexual decisions as well.
That's exactly right. And one thing that always sort of struck me is that certainly women don't get pregnant by themselves, and yet women are facing these decisions. And one thing I'm very pleased about is that we do have some men, some partners in this film that you see that they're right next to their wives and really feeling this with them and making the decision together as a couple. But there is this greater conversation about contraception and sexuality that is so, so important. And again, that tends to go back to people's faith beliefs. And I would also like to say that this, because this topic is both so broad and so reaches, it has long roots into religion, into rights, into, you know, gender equity, that there is far more nuance than is normally portrayed. So I met some anti-abortion, pro-life folks that also believe in contraception. So there is that. It's just that both sides of the movement, as it were, and I know sides isn't a great word, as you acknowledged, but there are differences, and normally we just don't have the space to get into them. But I do think that it's a very important part of this conversation. The clinic tends to ask women who are there, do they want access to birth control in the future? And they help offer them, connect them to some forms of birth control. But a crisis pregnancy center like Amnion doesn't promote birth control. They don't believe it's healthy. So there you have it, you know, just difference of opinion on that. But certainly, you know, sex is a part of life, and it's how we ensure future generations. And I'm not sure that that's going to change anytime soon.
Frontline director and producer Elizabeth Leiter. The program is The Abortion Divide. It's on SDPB tonight at 9 p.m. Central, 8 Mountain. Elizabeth, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Lori. I appreciate you.